Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We got lots to talk about on this weekend, so stay with us. Give us an hour or two, and we'll give you the best of health information that comes to us via a variety of sources. I read medical journals, I read magazine and newspaper articles, and I stay abreast of all the latest information so that I can crunch it for you on weekends and share it with you in this forum. And we invite your questions. 888-302-3684 is our number. 888-302-3684. We got lots of time for your phone calls. And we invite you to call in with questions. But no matter, while we await your calls, I've got lots to talk about. And among the stories that got my attention this week, and I thought about while running this morning, because I'm an inveterate exerciser, and my exercise bouts generally last anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour. I'm in the pool swimming laps. I'm on the bicycle taking long bike rides. And this morning I took a 4 mile run. Took about 35 minutes or so. And then my eyes alighted on this article, which has attracted a lot of attention this week. It's been in all the newspapers. And the headline is, 1 minute enough exercise to get health benefits, study says. The implication being that if you spend a lot of time exercising, possibly you're an idiot. So let's drill down on that story and see what's going on here. Dateline Hamilton, Ontario. 1 single minute of hard exercise can have as positive a health benefit as 45 minutes of moderate exercise, according to a study in Canada. The researchers were at McMaster University, and they found that minute-long exercise regimens were more than enough to accomplish what many exercises put much more time into. Dr. Martin Jabala, a professor of kinesiology, that is movement science and exercise, said in a press release, quote, our study shows that an interval-based approach can be more efficient. You can get health and fitness benefits comparable to the traditional approach in less time. And what the study involved, they recruited 27 sedentary men who practiced either one of two different exercise regimens for 12 weeks. One was an interval training regimen, that the so-called one-minute exercise, which includes three bouts of 20-second all-out cycle sprints. Go, 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 go for 20 seconds, all out, with 2 minutes of slowdown in between, three times. That adds up to 1 minute, right? Well, not quite, because it's still, you know, with the intervals, it still takes you about 10 minutes to accomplish this regimen. Or a moderate exercise protocol with 45 minutes of continuous cycling. And what they found was that the results were comparable in terms of the benefits. Peak oxygen uptake, that's a measure of fitness, increased in both groups by an identical 19%. Insulin sensitivity was improved in both groups by about the same. In other words, that's the propensity to diabetes. Insulin resistance, of course, associated with hypertension, cardiovascular risk, all these problems, inflammation. And muscle content also increased. So they got muscle benefits that were the same during the 12-week study. So, the implication is, are you wasting your time when you engage in long bouts of exercise? Well, I have some reservations about this study because obviously it's a headline grabber. It highlights the benefits of something called HIIT, H-I-I-T, High Intensity Interval Training, which is an increasingly popular form of exercise. And, you know, I got to say, there is something to this, because I sometimes go to the gym in the morning and I see these individuals sitting there on recumbent bikes, and they're reading a newspaper, they're talking on their cell phones, maybe they're doing some fashion shopping, you know, selecting their latest athletic shoes or workout garb, while they kind of gently push the pedals for, you know, perhaps a half an hour, 45 minutes at a time. And I wonder, are they really accruing exercise benefits? Yes, there are some benefits to that, but the benefits are not that great when you don't push yourself. So in a way, this study could be interpreted as being a study about how little benefit there is from moderate exercise. And you know, look, no question, some exercise better than none, but the fact that these individuals putting in little time had equal benefits to those doing a out of a leisurely workout for 45 minutes in duration suggests that maybe that 45-minute moderate exercise bout wasn't all that good. But a little exercise can go a long way, and even something like climbing a few flights of stairs on your lunch hour can provide a quick and effective workout if there's nothing else available. And say you're you know, on a trip, in a business meeting, or maybe you're pressed for time, do something at least. But the suggestion is push yourself a little bit. Try to replicate the benefits of high-intensity interval training. Look it up. Google it. HIIT. That's a new exercise trend. And it can be a time saver, providing you apply the adequate effort. 888-302-3684 is our number. Okay, we've long known that anti-inflammatory drugs have downsides. The main downside of anti-inflammatory drugs is that they can damage the stomach lining and lead to ulcers. I learned early on in my medical training that patients could wind up in the emergency room with serious bleeding ulcers after taking a few Advil, ibuprofen, Motrin. This is a very, very serious problem and results in hospitalizations of literally tens of thousands of Americans every year. But a little known fact is that people who quaff these anti-inflammatory drugs like candy, which, by the way, they urge you to do via advertisements on TV. You know, they say, well, you know, you're achy, and they show the typical middle-aged guy. You know, maybe he's engaged in sports or he's engaged in some lifting. And he's popping the the Advil, right? You know, it's effective. It reduces discomfort. There are even athletes who preventively take Advil prior to a race. Yeah, you know, they're going to have some aches and pains from pushing themselves, so take an Advil. Go for it. Well, a study just published in the Journal of Molecular and Cellular Cardiology points out the hazards of these non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, because, well, we've known for more than a decade that the risk of heart disease and stroke increases when people take pain relievers like ibuprofen and other either prescription or non-prescription NSAIDs. You know, the prescription NSAIDs like Voltaren, Feldene, these are powerful anti-inflammatory drugs. And the more powerful they are, the more they put the heart at risk. And this is actually one of the reasons why one medication has been taken off the market. It's Vioxx. Vioxx was supposed to be a safer non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug. It was supposed to reduce the risk of bleeding in the stomach lining. Well, it had to be taken off the market because it so dramatically increased the risk of heart attack and stroke that it was pulled. And it was estimated that literally thousands of individuals may have died because they took too much Vioxx. Well, this new study, Journal of Molecular and Cellular Cardiology, points out how the NSAIDs damage the body. Turns out they attack the mitochondria. These are the powerhouses of the cells, and the heart is a very, very power-hungry organ. So if the mitochondria in the heart are damaged, then the cardiac cell's ability to produce energy is impaired. It also turns out that non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs cause the production of what are called reactive oxygen species, otherwise known as free radicals, which can stress heart cells and damage them. And finally, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs impair the cardiac cell's proteasome. That's their way of degrading harmful proteins, and this can lead to a toxic buildup and eventually to the death of cardiac cells. The effect is worse when you take powerful prescription anti-inflammatory drugs like Meclamen. That was one drug tested, and it turned out that it was more likely to negatively impact heart health than Naprosyn, which is Aleve. Aleve is available over the counter. Naprosyn didn't affect the proteasome functions or cause heart cells to die. However, it did impair mitochondrial function and increased free radical production in cardiac cells. And it was associated with an increase in the chance of stroke. So the researchers say, quote, "We were surprised to see that many of the NSAIDs we tested were causing the cardiac cell to die when used for prolonged periods." Some people are taking these drugs too often, and this is a big problem. These drugs are abused. The good news, and you want to counteract that effect, occasionally you've got aches and pains, you want to take an Advil or an Aleve, take some vitamin C. The study suggested that ingesting an antioxidant like vitamin C before taking an NSAID may prevent cardiac cell death without interfering with the drug's ability to provide pain relief. And if you're really concerned about the heart effects of the NSAID, just use a topical NSAID. You can get a cream or a patch that provides pain relief directly to the uncomfortable area without exposing the entire body to the increased cardiovascular risk. So there you have it. These drugs provide some pain relief, but there is a cost. 888-302-3684 is our number. We invite your phone calls. We've got lots more to talk about on this weekend edition of Intelligent Medicine. I'll be right back. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Do you know there is a silent killer living among us? High blood pressure. It affects nearly 1 in 3 Americans and is a primary risk factor for stroke and heart attack. The CDC estimates that almost 20% of those with high blood pressure don't even know they have it. That's not surprising, since high blood pressure or hypertension is often symptomless. Research studies have shown that a daily dose of aged garlic extract can safely and effectively help to reduce blood pressure, as well as benefiting a number of other cardiovascular risk factors. And the most researched and highly respected aged garlic extract is all-natural Kyolic aged garlic extract. Odorless and organically grown, Kyolic aged garlic extract has been clinically tested to support blood pressure and cardiovascular health. So, along with getting your blood pressure checked regularly, get Kyolic Formula 109 for blood pressure and cardiovascular support today. Available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores everywhere.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Why exercise at all? Well, according to research, you can reverse skin aging with exercise. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But first, let's take a call from Dana in Minnesota. Is it Dana or Dana? I never can figure out which. Okay. Because I have a doctor colleague who, she doesn't care whether we call her Dana or Dana. It's spelled D-A-N-A, like you.
I'll answer to almost anything, but Dana's what I prefer.
Okay. So what's going on with you?
I was prescribed omeprazole about 3 years ago, and I've taken it daily. And I've just come to the point where I'm just trying to eliminate some of these prescriptions that I'm dependent on.
Yeah.
And I can't seem to get off of it.
Right.
I'm following the Whole30 eating plan, so it's very, you know.
Good. Good.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm feeling good.
So tell us about that. This is something that I've blogged about, and you know, as you probably know. You can go to drhoffman.com and you can hear my experiences with the diet. But I'm loving it, and I'm 4 months into it. I thought I'd just do it for 30 days on a lark, but I'm really enjoying the benefits. So so you're on omeprazole, which is otherwise known as Nexium, correct? And why'd you start taking it in the first place?
Well, okay, so I have colitis, and right. I was having chest pain from Azacol.
Right.
And my doctor somehow I ended up on omeprazole, and I guess he thought it was heartburn or something, but as soon as I went off the Advil, the chest pains went away, but now I'm addicted to this omeprazole that I can't seem to. I went for a week without it, following the whole 30, and things were good. I'm like, great, I found the solution, and now the heartburn's back again. And it's not every day. Like, today it's killing me, and can I take it every other day? I don't know.
Great. You know, this excellent question. And, you know, I'm frequently confronted with this situation because Nexium is, and all those medications, Nexium, Prevacid, Prilosec, you know, all those medications are highly addictive. In that when you take them, you suppress the stomach acid. Okay, fine. When you go off them, the stomach acid production soars. And so it's hard for people to distinguish whether they really need these medications or whether they're simply going through a withdrawal. And this is actually like many medications that Americans take. You know, sleep medications are like that. Pain medications are like that. Many different types of medications. So in getting and by the way, it's actually a mistake to prescribe these types of medications in patients who have colitis, because it turns out that as you probably know now, when you suppress the stomach acid, you damage the microbiome, the bacteria that constitute your natural reserve of bacteria in your intestinal tract. And by damaging that, you increase the risk for colitis. So this is a bad move by your doctor. We need to go to a hard break at the bottom of the hour, but your question deserves some additional consideration. Dana wants to know, how do you get off these powerful proton pump inhibitors, PPIs, meds like Nexium and Prilosec and Prevacid? We'll talk about that when we return. 888-302-3684 for Intelligent Medicine. Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman here, and we're answering a question from Dana in Minnesota. She wants to get off a powerful acid-blocking medication that she seems to be dependent on. And Dana, you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So so here's the deal. When you take these kinds of medications, you can't stop precipitously, as you discovered, because the acid production is going to come roaring back, and you're going to have symptoms. So what you need to do is you need to taper very slowly. And the tapering regimen that I use, I mean, look, there's no rush because you've been on this medication for a really long time, so you don't need to be off it next week. What I generally suggest is people, first of all, you're on 20 milligrams or 40 milligrams?
I don't know. I take
You take one pill. Okay, so you take one pill.
Yeah.
Some people are taking two pills, so it's even harder. So you're taking one pill. Suggestion is that you take the medication 2 out of 3 days. You know, pick every third day, go off the medication, but then the subsequent 2 days be on the medication. Do that for 1 month. The next month, take the medication every other day. All right?
Okay.
Then in the third month, you'll take the medication 1 day out of 3. And then finally, you should be ready to taper to off. Now, during that time, the key, though, is to, you know, provide yourself with, some support, and do some of the right things. Already, you're on a very good diet. That diet should help, because that diet tends to reduce, fermentation, overgrowth of bacteria in your small intestine, that's sometimes referred to as SIBO, small intestine bacterial overgrowth, creates a lot of gas and fermentation, and that can cause your stomach contents to reflux upward with an acid splash that causes discomfort. So the diet part, I think you're doing a good job. So the support should involve taking DGL, and lots of DGL. One of the mistakes that people make is they say, I took a couple of DGLs, didn't help my acid reflux. DGL is deglycerizinated licorice. It's available in health food stores as DGL. And these are little lozenges that you suck on, like cough drops. But they deliver powerfully anti-inflammatory licorice to your upper GI tract, which really soothes the discomfort and repairs the tissue. And the trick is you got to use about 8, 10, 12 a day. You can suck these things all day long. They're not very expensive, so you can buy a couple of bottles and, keep one at home, keep one in your desk at work, and just make sure you have them between meals throughout the day. The other product that I like to use is something called Endefen, E-N-D-E-F-E-N. And if you go to drhoffman.com, we have that. We have DGL available there. We also have Endefen available there. Endefen is a powder, and it's designed specifically for what you have, which is some sort of upper GI inflammation. And it contains really helpful ingredients like larch gum and cinnamon, which has a cooling effect on the upper GI tract, plantain, which is mucilaginous, which actually coats the esophagus and protects it. It has some apple fruit powder, which is provides pectin, which is also very nice for that mucosa, and a few other ingredients. And it synergizes very nicely to protect the gastrointestinal mucosa. And you also need to be taking probiotics. And what we, a little trick that we use sometimes is you are taking probiotics, but you consider taking Dr. Ahira's probiotic, and they are actually chewable. So when you chew them, when you swallow them, they actually go kind of far down in your gastrointestinal tract, and they don't do much good in the upper GI tract. If you chew them, you actually provide the helpful bacteria to the stomach and small intestine, where they may do some good in terms of reducing the imbalance that is formed. Because if you take these acid blockers for a long time, bacteria proliferate in the wrong places. The protective effect of stomach acid, which keeps bacteria at bay, is eliminated, and you get a overgrowth of bacteria where bacteria don't belong in your small intestine, sometimes in your stomach. And that's what causes sometimes some of the discomfort, inflammation, gas, bloating, and reflux. So if you were a patient and if you didn't get better, I mean, sometimes patients are very hard to treat, you know, with the regimen that I suggest. I mean, hopefully you can cure yourself this way. I would investigate whether you have something called SIBO, which is diagnosed via breath test. If you did, we would give you herbal, usually preferably herbs, to suppress the overgrowth. I mean, you don't have to know about this because, you know, hopefully you'll be cured with what I suggested. Or some patients even develop yeast infections in their stomach, and they require some antifungal medication. Your long-term use of acid-blocking medication is notorious for creating a yeast infection in the esophagus. And sometimes, you know, even when they look down there with an endoscope, they see whitish plaque, you know, just as a gynecologist might see if they were to look at you while you're having a vaginal yeast infection. And that, you know, as you know, as a woman, that's uncomfortable, irritating, you know, and creates a certain burning sensation. And it can happen in the esophagus if you block the acid. So there you have it. I think that's a protocol that you ought to give a shot to. So, hey, call us back in a few months. Let us know either way. Either you're better, or if you're stuck, we'll try and help you out some more, all right?
Okay, and a probiotic, is that available on your site also, too? I've never heard of Dr. Here.
Dr. Here is, yeah, it should be available even in Minnesota.
All right. Okay, thank you so much. I enjoy listening to your show.
Oh, great. Thank you so much for listening. Yeah, and keep listening to also our podcast, because they're among the best-kept secrets in the media, because we got lots of additional information from great speakers, and we try to get the word out about natural therapies. Thanks for calling. All right, here's an item that has to do with one of the unanticipated benefits of exercise. There's a researcher, his name is Dr. Tamopolsky, and he was seeking to demonstrate that exercise helped to prevent aging. And so to study aging, he got a hold of a special type of mice that were bred for laboratory tests. These mice are missing certain genes that protect against aging, and they age very rapidly. They turn gray, they slow down, they develop all kinds of degenerative diseases more rapidly than do regular mice. And he subjected them to two different regimens. One was a control group of mice who were just sort of sitting around, not doing a lot, getting fed. The identically fed test group of mice were put through a very rigorous exercise program. I guess they were given treadmills, encouraged, you know, to run around the treadmills like mice do. And then they checked the mice in terms of various characteristics of aging. And they found that, lo and behold, the mice that exercised were healthier. They had longer telomeres. Telomeres are the things that protect the DNA from unraveling and ultimately causing organ failure and death. The exercise also, somewhat to their surprise, prevented the mice from getting gray and looking old. There was a dramatic difference. You got to see this picture here between the exercised mouse and the mouse who has glistening fur and looks youthful and vigorous, and the sort of old, you know, worn out looking gray, frizzy haired mouse who is sedentary. Very, very dramatic picture that illustrates the effects of rapid aging unchecked by exercise. They found that in the mice who exercised, their telomere length was restored. But the unanticipated result is the mice looked rejuvenated with an exercise program. So, hey, you know, if... if we can appeal to your vanity, exercise truly can be a boon to your appearance. All right, here's a surprise. And, you know, we talk about probiotics for a wide variety of problems. Probiotics, it turns out, help to stop menopause-like bone loss in mice. These are mice who had their ovaries removed. That'll cause, just as in humans, rapid onset of bone loss. And what they found was that by providing probiotics to the mice, their bones were protected against rapid onset bone loss. It turns out the gut bacteria may play a role in reducing inflammation and in restoring the vitality of bones, even in the absence of hormones. So fascinating study using Lactobacillus rhamnosus, GG, which is a common type of bacteria found even in popular yogurts. Another study illustrates yet another benefit of probiotics. Lactobacillus, it turns out, has been found to reverse cow's milk allergies in children. And a new study suggests that a protein made by Lactobacillus, or actually in this case, bifidobacteria, which is often put in kids' formulas, kids' probiotic formulas, has the ability to reduce the effects of food allergies. We know that the number of children with food allergies in the United States has increased by 18% between the years of 1997 and 2007. Well, maybe, just maybe, that has to do with overuse of antibiotics and destruction of the bacteria in the intestinal tract. In this study, mice were given a common test allergen, albumin, which is found in egg whites, mixed with something that increases the likelihood of developing a food allergy response. It's a common adjuvant that accelerates food allergies. And what they found was that when the mice were given bifidobacteria, the likelihood of developing food allergies was reduced. So very, very interesting study suggesting that something in probiotics helps to prevent or block food allergies. 888-302-3684 is our number. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
If you're interested in managing your blood pressure without medication, I have some exciting news about a new effective non-drug treatment. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, here to tell you about the Zona Plus. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. It's so effective, it works for 9 in 10 people. The Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. At least 22 clinical studies confirm regular use can result in an average decrease in blood pressure of 10% or more in just 4 to 8 weeks. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, the company is offering you special savings of $50 in free shipping. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman to get your $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or tryzonanow.com. Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. 888-302-3684 is our number. Or if you don't care to call during this hour or two of Intelligent Medicine, you can email us your question to radioprogram@AOL.com, and we will use your question as grist for the mill for our weekly Q&A with Layla podcast, wherein we answer listener questions. radioprogram@AOL.com. And recently we did a podcast available at drhoffman.com with Dr. Brian Fallon on the subject of Lyme disease. And there's some real issues with Lyme disease. Sometimes it's hard to tell whether someone has Lyme disease. And one of the dilemmas in Lyme disease is that if you get bit by a tick, it's not 100% that you're going to get Lyme disease. It sort of depends on whether the tick is carrying Lyme disease, whether the tick has adhered to your body long enough to transmit the Lyme disease. To some extent, it depends on your own immune response. And yet, lots of people are dosed with prophylactic antibiotics, which are not inconsequential in terms of their side effects. You know, they say, just in case, we're going to give you a couple of weeks of doxycycline because, God forbid, you know, we leave Lyme disease untreated and you can end up with real serious problems long term. Also, for some people who've been treated for Lyme disease, they're still sick. We don't know if they actually still have Lyme disease or whether they just have the aftermath of Lyme disease. So we welcome this development. This comes to us from the Medical University of Vienna. Now, why is this coming from Vienna instead of from UConn, University of Connecticut, or Yale University, or someplace which is in the epicenter of Lyme disease? Well, it turns out the Europeans are starting to see quite a lot of Lyme disease. It's a slightly different variant, but it's becoming a big concern over there. They got woods, they got forests, and people are coming down with Lyme disease left and right over there. So they have something called the EU ID Lyme Project. EU stands for European Union. And they're trying to come up with better ways to provide early detection of Lyme disease. And they may have come up with something. The research group at the Medical University of Vienna is working on developing a new test for early detection of Lyme disease that's going to improve our ability to detect an active infection more easily than before, so that healthy people with Lyme disease antibodies in their blood, but well, some people test positive for Lyme disease, but they've got antibodies. That means they may have been exposed, they may have dealt with an infection without severe consequences in the past, but they still test positive. We don't want them to receive unnecessary antibiotic treatment. And we also want appropriate treatments to be initiated at an early stage. Currently, the antibody test, you know, say you get bit by a tick and you want a Lyme test, your doctor says that's not going to do any good because the tests that are currently available only provide a reliable result 3 to 4 weeks after an infection has occurred. And that's too late. You don't want to wait 3 to 4 weeks. So, the researchers say, quote, not every tick bite necessarily results in infection, and not every positive Lyme disease test means that infection is present. And therefore, the new test will allow more accurate and early diagnosis. So don't ask your doctor yet for this test because it's currently being researched. However, the researchers at the University of Vienna say the test, which is known as the Ixodes kit, Ixodes is the it's the entomological name for a tick, should be in clinical use in the autumn of 2016. So coming down the pike, hopefully in time for next year's crop of Lyme disease diagnoses.
And this story, a related story, has to do with Parkinson's disease. You know, Parkinson's disease, hard to diagnose because some people have some movement problems. They have the shakes. But there is no test for Lyme disease, no blood test anyway. Not even a brain scan will reveal the presence of Lyme disease. I'm sorry, of Parkinson's disease. Parkinson's disease may be present in an early form, literally for years, before it's formally diagnosed. Some of you may have been in this very self-same predicament. You have symptoms that are suggestive of Parkinson's disease, but your doctor says, well, you know, we'll have to wait and see how this develops. Well, you don't want to wait and see too long because maybe corrective action could be undertaken earlier if such a diagnosis is rendered. So for the millions of people around the world currently living with Lyme disease, their diagnosis came too late. But researchers in Australia have developed a blood test that researchers claim, quote, will enable doctors to detect with unprecedented reliability the abnormal metabolism of blood cells in people with Parkinson's. And this will enable us to diagnose it and treat it earlier. And that could be a very, very beneficial. The blood test has been tested on 38 patients, 29 of whom have the disease, 9 of whom served as a control group. And the results have been very promising. The researchers say this is a really exciting discovery. Parkinson's debilitating disorder, and currently there is no cure. But early diagnosis and treatment could enable better outcomes and a greater quality of life for people with a condition. And that will be of great benefit to sufferers and their families. And what's looming is something even more significant, because a far bigger problem is Alzheimer's disease. Very same thing. Hard to diagnose. Yes, there are brain scans, but the brain scans are not reliable. The clinical diagnosis is based on, you know, inability to perform certain intellectual functions. Various types of verbal memory testing can reveal the presence of Alzheimer's disease. But is it ordinary aging or is it Alzheimer's? That's the question for a lot of people. It is now a possibility that the blood test being used to detect early Parkinson's disease could be adapted to detect all types of neurodegenerative disorders, including Alzheimer's, and that would be a very great boon to be able to pick up on potential Alzheimer's diagnosis early and get in there with proper intervention. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, 888-302-3684. Coming up, another hour of Intelligent Medicine. Please stay with us.